buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live hour number two of overtime from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Overtime with William Pattison joining you on a Friday, getting you ready for a big weekend of Vols basketball taking on Kentucky. Broke it down in the first hour. Senior day, a lot of emotions. These guys deserve to go out the right way. Let's hope that the Vols are able to do that. In this hour, we'll get you ready for a big weekend in college basketball. Outside of the Kentucky and Tennessee game, there's some other big matchups as well. You got UNC and Duke. What a rivalry that is. Kansas in action as well against Houston. Big games. We'll break it down and get you ready for the big weekend. But first, we've got Dawson, who's not here today with us, as I'm riding solo on the production table and on the mic. But it's good to multitask. Dawson's joining us after a big win for the Lady Vols. What's up? What's up, Dawson?
First of all, good to be out here again. Coming to you again from the Palmetto State over here in South Carolina in Greenville, where, if you could not have wanted a better effort from the Lady Vols today. Start to finish, never really a lull, just always dominant. I mean, on both ends of the floor. I mean, probably, and I said this, I was talking to you guys earlier, I said this is probably one of the best wins of Kelly Harper's coaching career here.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a stretch. I mean, this was by far. I mean, the biggest win of the year, I think, even better than the Arkansas, the Vanderbilt game. I mean, this was everything you could have possibly wanted. Jewel Spear, I mean, this shows what she could be, what she was brought in to do. 1.3 threes in a row in a span of three possessions. It was pretty insane to watch her go to work. Rekia Jackson, not in foul trouble today. She gets into the 20s like we're used to seeing out of her. Tamari Key goes for double figures and has a big day defensively. I mean, this was literally everything you could have possibly asked for out of this team. And, you go up into the break up 13, and you're like, well, you hope you don't come out and kind of let that slip, which has been a problem for this team at times.
Yeah.
And they did more than that. I mean, we're up 17 before you could blink in the second half, and Alabama never had an answer. They'd string a couple points together, string a couple buckets together, and all of a sudden here come the Lady Vols. They'd be like, all right, we're going to settle down and hit a couple buckets. And, I mean, that's by far their best win of the weekend, by far their best win of the year, and now sets up what should be another fun date with the top-ranked Gamecocks tomorrow here, what should be a rowdy crowd, whichever way you may go with it, whether that be the Lady Vol faithful plus Ole Miss and LSU. If they both win tonight, I imagine their fans will be pulling for the Big Orange tomorrow, and then obviously the home crowd here in South Carolina is going to be rooting on their Gamecocks, so it should be a fun one. I mean, going into tomorrow, I'll tell you what, this team shows up like they did today. I'm not saying it will happen, but I'm definitely saying that this team could absolutely win tomorrow, considering how South Carolina looked in their opener in the tournament this afternoon.
Yeah, the Vols shoot 51% from the field to Alabama's 40% from the three-point line. The Lady Vols doubled what Bama did, 37% for the night. Crimson Tide only shot 19%. Also got a 43-28 rebound differential, and they were able to just cruise in this one. As you mentioned, Jewel Spear, 24 points for her. Rekia Jackson puts in 22. Sarah Puckett follows up a big game yesterday with a respectable 10 points. Tamari Key gets in and the involved as well. What do you think was the best thing from this game? As you said, this is probably Kelly Harper's best win.
I could name a couple things. I think the shooting was number one. I think this team, and we kind of talked about it when we would talk about the Lady Vols, it just felt like they never were very consistent offensively. Someone would have a good game, but then they go out next game. And Jewel Spear, I think, is example number one of someone that goes out and has a really great performance. Next game out, would come out and put up five. Well, she puts up double digits yesterday in our win over Kentucky.
Yeah.
Today goes out and really takes over, especially early in the second half, and puts you over the edge, gets 24 points.
Yeah.
So I think the shooting is probably number one. I mean, again, their best shooting performance of the year. And so the offense is probably number one for me. But number two, I think, would be not making mistakes, not shooting yourself in the foot, which, again, has been a big problem with this team. It snowballs games, but today really limited the turnovers, really limited the foul trouble. I think at one point in the second half, all five players on the floor had no personal fouls, which is something that this team has not had basically all year. Just were able to limit your own mistakes and make it tougher on Bama. You just weren't giving them any opportunities. So I think that is big as well. And the ability to answer runs. Again, it felt like something went wrong for this team. Even last week, even the South Carolina game and the LSU game at home, one thing goes wrong, all of a sudden, LSU, South Carolina are on a 10-0 run and you never respond.
Yeah.
This game, Alabama would string together 2, 4, 6 points. In fact, they did. The Lady Vols go up 6-0 to start the game. All of a sudden, you look up, it's 10-10. Alabama's on a run, but after that, the Lady Vols settled in, went up by double digits, and literally never looked back. I don't think they were tied after 10-10 today. I think they had the lead the entire night. So that's the biggest thing for me, is limiting mistakes. And, man, if this team plays like that offensively, there you see what they can be and what they were kind of promised to be before the season started as a preseason top five.
Yeah, the Lady Vols advance to Saturday's SEC Tournament semifinal game to face the number one seed and number one ranked South Carolina Gamecocks, a team that the Lady Vols just played last week and held to their lowest point total at home this season. Dawson, what kind of chance do you give the Lady Vols tomorrow to pull an upset?
Well, it's always going to be tough. I mean, Dawn Staley has built a machine in Columbia that knows how to win these type of games in these type of settings. Six-time SEC tournament champions now under Dawn Staley, just in the last 10 years, and when they lose, they number one don't lose often, and number two, it's usually on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah,
I don't remember the last time they lost on Saturday to a team in the SEC tournament. So it'll be tough, but knowing how they played today, and we did get to watch a considerable amount of it, being down here. Look, they did not look like the number one Gamecocks today, in my opinion. Now they pull away to win by double digits, but much of that game, I think they had 14 turnovers just in the first half. I think they got close to 20 towards the end of the game, and never shot well. It never felt like they had any offensive consistency. They look a little bit vulnerable. I mean, obviously you played them close twice already. You get the benefit of you've seen them twice here in the last 3 weeks or so, which I mean makes for something good, especially with the momentum you put up today. Knowing you'll have a decent crowd, it's on a neutral court. To a degree, obviously being about an hour here from Columbia, I give them a pretty decent chance. I don't know if it will happen, but again, judging on those last couple efforts, if they come out anything like they did today, I think they'll at the very least, make it tough on Dawn Staley's group tomorrow afternoon.
Well, let's hope they're able to pull off the upset. Another Vols team in action in basketball, that's the men's team taking on Kentucky on Senior Day. I opened the show in the first hour, given my keys to the game. I think there are a lot of emotions that come with senior night. I think that, this is a really good offensive team. You've got to make sure you key in defensively from the three-point line, making sure you protect that. And finally, sending off these seniors the right way, getting a good win, and making sure that these role players outside of Connect and Ziegler and Adu get involved as well. What do you think are the biggest keys to tomorrow?
I think the first one could be enjoy it. You obviously want to go and win the game and have a good performance and lock up the one seed, but take a second and enjoy it. I mean, especially, Dalton Connect, he's going to have his senior day tomorrow, and that's great. It's a great moment. He'll get a great ovation, obviously, from the faithful. But for Vescovy, for James, for these guys that have really poured everything into this program for 5 years now, soak it in. Those guys have earned it. They deserve it. We may have our gripes with a couple of them this season, but they have more than earned their moment in the sun. So that would be the first thing for me. Yes, it's Kentucky. Yes, it's a big game. It's big audience, a lot of eyeballs on this one, but enjoy it. I think it's the first one for me. Soak it in and kind of take a second to recognize these guys that have done so much. In terms of the actual game, get a good start. I think it's something we always talk about, especially against a Kentucky team that really loves to score points. You can't afford to be getting a bad start, so get a good start. Don't let their offense get going. Get yours going first, especially in front of what's going to be arguably the rowdiest crowd of the year. Obviously, with Kentucky coming to town, it's Senior Day. You expect the crowd to be into it, so use that and get a good offensive start. And then the glass. I think that's going to be the crucial thing tomorrow. We've been better at doing it at home, you know, controlling that and making sure you pull down some rebounds and keep yourself in it that way. Take away their second chances, obviously, with as good an offense as they are. Don't give them second opportunities. Make them pay for their misses and, you know, keep yourself in it on the defensive end as well and be able to convert defense into offense and protect your home court. Go get a one seed and take this program to where they've never been before.
And Dawson, one last thing before I let you go. You know, the one seed now seems to be in possession of Tennessee heading into tomorrow. Is something we, me and Jace talked about yesterday, was if you lose this game against the Wildcats, do you forfeit really the firm grasp on that number one seed? Do you think the Vols have to win tomorrow to keep the number one seed?
I'm not sure. I obviously want to say no. You hope that it doesn't matter, but knowing how possibly razor thin that gap is, you know, obviously you want to just go ahead and take care of business and get the job done. I don't know if they have to win, but it certainly would be a nice bit of icing on the cake to the resume.
For sure.
Another top 15 win, a series sweep of Kentucky, a Kentucky team who is out for SEC seeding tomorrow. They're out for national seeding tomorrow. They need it more than Tennessee does, in my opinion. We'll see if that translates to the game. They have to win. I don't think so personally, but obviously you'd much rather win and take away any doubt. So no matter if you have to or not, I think you want to get this one done. Don't leave any doubt. Don't leave any questions. Go win tomorrow. Make one more statement and say, now we're definitively on that one.
Well, the Vols will hopefully be cutting down the nets if they're able to win tomorrow against Kentucky in celebration of the SEC regular season championship. Dawson, we hope that you get to witness a net cutting as well. Hopefully the Lady Vols can continue to win. Enjoy your trip. Enjoy your time. We appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll see y'all here in a couple weeks when we're all back.
Yep. All right, Dawson. Thank you for joining us, man. I'm talking to Dawson Wise, one of our co-host on Overtime. He's at the in Greenville, where the Lady Vols get a big win over Alabama. Enjoyed breaking that down with him. Now as we move into college basketball as a whole for the weekend, conference tournaments throughout the country are already on their way, including the Elite Arch Madness. What conference is that? I can't remember that. It's played in St. Louis, though. A little play on words there. Arch Madness. Yeah, you get it. Okay. But Saturday marks the final Monster regular season slate. Some stunning is, you know, right around the corner. Some of the best teams in the country might only have 120 guaranteed minutes of basketball left. The season is long, but the end arrives suddenly, and tomorrow is the last weekend or last group of games in the regular season before these teams all get into their conference tournaments. Let's begin with one of the big ones, number 7 North Carolina versus number 9 Duke. In each of these games, I'm going to try to talk about a couple of the storylines and the bigger ones. And this one, it's something to not overlook, and that's how much Duke's transition defense has improved. The last time these two teams played, and this was in Chapel Hill, the Tar Heels were able to pull away with it and really had a firm grasp of the game throughout the way. UNC ran Duke off the floor in transition. 27 points in transition in the 93-84 victory. It was Duke's worst transition defensive performance of the season. And UNC didn't just do it off turnovers was the issue. They were able to push the envelope after getting defensive rebounds. They were just able to simply outpace Duke. And we, you know, talked in that first hour about how important pace has been to this Tennessee team. It was very important for the Tar Heels and able to pull away from Duke. Even when Duke was able to score, UNC was beating them down the floor. Their worst performance of the season in that aspect, it was unacceptable. But since then, Duke has been a little bit better in transition, so I think it's something to watch for in this one. The Blue Devils held Notre Dame, Miami, Wake Forest, Louisville, Virginia, and NC State to 10 points or fewer in transition. If that trend is able to stick, I think Duke could win this game and possibly by a fair margin, because in that first game, you go back and watch the tape, UNC got a bulk of their points, 27 points in transition. If that number is what Duke has been holding these teams to in conference play, 10 points or fewer, then that's a double-digit victory for Duke if they're able to stop the Tar Heels in that first matchup. So I'd look for that transition defense for the Blue Devils. And also on the other side, if the Tar Heels are able to push it out themselves and get their offense rolling once again, that's something to watch for. I think a good head-to-head matchup in this one, Tyrese Proctor versus R.J. Davis. Proctor did a pretty good job on Davis in the first matchup, holding the ACC Player of the Year to 17 points on 14 shots. Can he replicate that type of showing once again in this matchup tomorrow? Proctor's attention to detail, I think, will be very important in this one. Carolina can kind of lull you to sleep with the normal post entries to Armando Bacot, very vanilla offense, but it lulls these defenses to sleep because they get so focused on that post feed to Bacot, and when they know how special he is, and these teams kind of forget what UNC has on the perimeter as well. Davis is an excellent cutter, and Elliot Cadu, another really talented guard for this Tar Heel squad, is a sneaky solid screen setter who can free Davis up if they decide to do some pick and roll between the guards for some open jumpers. Proctor simply cannot allow anyone to scream him effectively. And when he does get hit, UNC has to switch up and run Davis off the stripe. So in this matchup, I think it's be very important to watch the transition game and the battle between Tyrese Proctor and R.J. Davis. Always a fun matchup is this rivalry. I mean, you don't need me to tell you that. Duke versus UNC is incredible. Duke is a team that is, kind of cruised by this year. And the ACC is not that good, but they have yet to really wow me in a game this season. They have an opportunity to do that tomorrow against a UNC team that's very good. Let's move to the Big 12. Number 14, Kansas at number 1, Houston. This is an interesting one because you get two teams that are kind of coming in on totally different paths. Kansas has kind of had a free fall, as of late, losing 4 out of their last 8, including losses to BYU, and at home losing to BYU. And Kevin McClure being out has hurt them, but he is back healthy now, back in the lineup. I don't know if he's necessarily 100% healthy, but he's back in the lineup. And they cannot afford to have a performance like they did against Texas Tech a couple weeks ago where they were completely just bashed that whole game. And this Houston team is very, very good. So something to not overlook in this one is, did Houston find something in the second half against Kansas in their original matchup? Because as hot as this Kansas team, or as hot as this Houston team has been, they were embarrassed by Kansas at home. And really, since that game, Kansas has been very streaky. But Kansas did have their best one of the season against this Cougars team by running them out of the building almost, by double digits. But Houston in that second half was able to pull a little bit closer because of them scoring in transition. Houston scored 13 transition points against Kansas in the first tilt, but 11 of them came in the second half, and they were all by L.J. Cryer, transfer from Baylor, who's been a really big piece of this team as a guard. Houston was in catch-up mode, if you will, trying to kind of find something that would work to get back in this game. And Cryer was running and gunning in transition as much as possible. So it was a little unfamiliar style of play for the Cougars, but it was working. What if that starts from tip-off on Saturday, especially playing at home? You've already got that momentum. And playing in transition, speeding up the game, could work in their favor. There are opportunities to be had in early offense against this Kansas transition defense that is more good than great. KU ranks 69th nationally in transition points allowed per game. But you have to wonder, now going on the road, does that same number reflect in a hostile environment? Houston has to find a way to tap that button from the opening tip, in my opinion. Two games, two really big matchups. I think transition play will play big. Now, for Kansas, as I mentioned, a really up-and-down stretch for them, getting blown out by Texas Tech, losing to BYU at home. But this is still a really good team with, a guy in Hunter Dickinson that is one of the best players in the country. Kevin McClure is very impactful for this team, averaging 20 a night. Juwan Harris is one of the best and most veteran point guards in the country. So this is a good team. But I think the X factor for this Jayhawks group is Johnny Furthy, and a freshman who can shoot the ball at a very, very good clip, and he has gone AWOL in the last month. He's made multiple three-pointers just once in the last eight games after conventionally splashing threes against Houston. He's made up for it for a few timely drives, but Sharp can't let him see a big basket early, or Kansas can certainly stick around on the road. Conversely, Furphy was kind of let off the hook on the other end. Sharp is shooting 48% at the rim, but those confrontational drives, I should rather say, will still be extremely important to opening up space and getting KU into rotation. So I think Johnny Furphy in the matchup against him will be something to watch on both ends. What Furphy is able to do offensively, but what Houston is able to do against him defensively. So something to watch in that one. A number 11 Baylor heading to Texas Tech. Can Joe Toussaint find his jumper again? Texas Tech, a couple weeks ago, blew Kansas out of the water and looked like a team that was trending in the right direction. Since then, they have struggled, and Joe Toussaint struggling to shoot has been a product of that. The Texas Tech guard is shooting just 2 of 16 from downtown in the last four games. Those are not good numbers. But there will be cracks in this vulnerable Baylor perimeter defense, which has improved as of late. But I think overall, when you look at this team throughout the year, this is not a traditional Baylor defense that's usually hard-nosed and one of the biggest factors of this team. They've been better, but they have not been great when you look at the season as a whole. If Baylor plays zone, I think Toussaint will have a lot of great looks and opportunity to get that rhythm going again. If Baylor plays man, I think Toussaint can take Ray J. Dennis of Baylor off the bounce whenever he wants. He's the key for this Texas Tech club in this one. And this would be a big win for them, a big opportunity against a Baylor team that has been trending closer and closer to that number 2 seed. Texas Tech has an opportunity to boost their resume tomorrow. Let's head to the Mountain West. We talked about my best bet being San Diego State in a very tight Mountain West. New Mexico, the Lobos, head to number 22 Utah State tomorrow night. Utah State struggled to defend New Mexico's ball screen offense in the first matchup. Nelly Jr. Joseph went off for 26 points on 11 of 12 shooting in the Lobos' 99-86 home win earlier on. He was spoon-fed almost, just easy looks left and right by Donovan Dent, one of the guards for the Lobos. New Mexico has to try and unlock that pick-and-roll maestro again if they want to notch another monster road victory and boost a resume that has been faltering as of late. If you asked me in January who is a team to watch out for in the tournament, I would have said New Mexico. The Lobos were rolling at home, stacking up big wins, embarrassing teams. They beat San Diego State, turned around the next day, and beat a Utah State team very handily as well. This was a really good group. However, they've had some really bad losses as of late, and this is an opportunity to get off that bubble line, which they now find themselves right now heading into conference tournament play. Utah State's a very, very good basketball team. Danny Sprinkle is coaching this group, projected to finish ninth in the Mountain West coming into the season, and Utah State's the number one team in the Mountain West. They're a really good team. They play really, really good defense on the perimeter too. Tough matchup for the Lobos, but I think if they're able to get that pick and roll going, we could see them pull the upset. Oklahoma at Texas. Injuries are a huge part of this one. Dylan Dessou and Javion McCollum, arguably the best player for each respective team, are up in the air. Texas is a team that's fighting to be 500 for the season in Big 12 play. Oklahoma had a really nice start to the season, has kind of come back down to reality come conference play, in a very competitive conference, that is. But this is another one to watch out for. Two teams looking to get one more big win ahead of the tournament, and both teams need it. Finally, let's take a look at Memphis at Florida Atlantic. As I mentioned in the first hour, talking about the transfer portal, good luck figuring out this Memphis club because not a lot of people can do it, and I can't either. It beat UAB by 19 after trailing by 22 points earlier in the game. Who does that? who does that? Memphis does, and this Memphis team does. FAU got whatever it wanted at the rim against Memphis last time, but it can't shoot 25% on 28 attempts from three in this one. These are two teams that are on the bubble as well. Florida Atlantic came in as one of the hottest teams, hottest names in the country to start the season, has faltered and come back down to reality. And Memphis is a team that started off the year hotter than anyone, and in conference play has been very vanilla and all over the place. Hard to read both these teams and what production will get, but you could very well say this is a tournament or bust kind of game for both these teams that are both on the bubble. A lot of big matchups tomorrow. Enjoy March. Enjoy these games because as we get closer to March, the amount of games we get is going to dwindle. So take advantage of watching a couple of these big matchups that we just discussed. Looking forward to a big day in college basketball outside of what we have going on in Knoxville. 865-546-8200. Your number if you want to hop in and join. About to head to a break. A perfect time to call in as I'm doing the production and on the air. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about a team that I think should be on some people's radars going into the tournament, and we'll also do Vols bracketology with Joe Lenardi's new slate right here on Overtime.
The team's gear just wasn't up to par. Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
eBay Motors here for the ride. Elbow grease and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive entirely its own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it all at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home the win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
I put the new 4G's on the G. I drive into the bloody bottoms is underneath. Cause I might got it.
Back here on Overtime, balling into the new weekend. As a lot of basketball games in action, as we just broke it down. Plenty of action outside of just the Vols and Wildcats. Big one in Knoxville tomorrow. We appreciate you listening on this Friday. About to head off to spring break tomorrow, headed to Destin, Florida. So there will be no overtime next week, but you can follow me at William Pattison on X/Twitter, whatever you want to call it these days, and you can get all my opinions of what's going on throughout the SEC tournament. But we will see you not this upcoming Monday, but the next Monday, right here for normally scheduled programming of Overtime. Let's head to the phones. We've got Bruce on the line. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, William. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. So you're running solo, huh?
Running solo tonight. The crew, we got one in Greenville for the Lady Vols tournament. And Jace is on spring break as well, so he left this morning. So I'm running the production board, running the podcast, and also trying to host and keep everything rolling and afloat. So it's fun, but
fantastic.
A little, yeah.
So so couple of things. I agree with you about Vols basketball. Really, the excitement for tomorrow's game, and then into next week for the tournament. And then into March Madness, but I think there's a greater number of X factors. I think that, for example, if DK doesn't have a 25-point game, you have to find some greater X factors. And I would say that James and Scovey and maybe Gainey. All those guys need to contribute at least 10 points to pick up the slack. And as you can see, some of the games they've played this year, when Connect's not on, when they actually add close to 10 points or more, the Vols have a tendency to do really well. And I think that's going to be important for the tournaments next week and for March Madness. So,
yeah, I think – Yeah, I think Connect, you know what he brings every night. I think early on in the season, a lot of the role players were trying to figure out where they fit on this team. But I think as the season has gone on, you've seen performances where you can go back and look at those games and say, okay, Jemai Mashak had his footprint on this game. Tobey Awaka had his footprint on this game. Josiah Jordan-James had his footprint on this game. And I think that's very important, especially come tournament time where there's a lot of unknown. A team could very easily just not match up well against Tennessee, take Dalton Connect out of the game. You need guys to step up. And I think that's one thing we've yet to really have yet, which I think is a good thing, because I think the Vols are so due for a Santiago Vescovi, just great performance in the tournament, a guy that's been there before. I've been lobbying for it for weeks, and I think we could possibly get that. Gainey's a guy who's a spark plug, can come off the bench and provide instant offense from the perimeter. And in a tournament situation where you need a couple of threes to get back into a game, he provides you that. But I think one of the best things about this team is that they've continued to learn from their mistakes. And they've been able to respond to adversity multiple times this year. Just in the recent memory, you're trailing at Auburn, trailing against Auburn at home and trailing at Alabama. You find ways to win both those games against well-coached clubs and also very dangerous offensive clubs as well. You're able to find a way to win. So I think Tennessee, in terms of the tournament readiness, I think if you're able to get consistent production from your guys, like you're mentioning in Vescovi and Josiah Jordan-James and Gainey, really, if you're able to get three or four guys, 8 points, 10 points, outside of what Connect and Ziegler and Adu are able to do, that's where I think this Tennessee team is at its best.
And that's a little bit of my point. I totally agree with you. I think that's the important factor for tomorrow and going forward is far down the road in the tournaments that we get. So I agree with you. I'm going to kind of switch the page here on NFL, and Russell Wilson,
yeah,
quarterback. I mean, 3 years ago when they signed that deal, I thought it was the stupidest thing ever. And then you fast forward to today. Why even consider Russell Wilson at this point? I mean, he's older. he was the most boring guy to watch this past NFL. I mean, I had to turn the TV off. He was so boring.
Yeah.
So my question is why? Why even mess with him?
Well, so going back to first off, you know, talking about when that trade was made, I you know, have been on record for saying that I thought it was not a good deal when it was done. I thought that the Seattle Seahawks had the better weapons offensively, the better defense, the better coach, a better franchise. I didn't like the move, but basically Seattle said, look, we've had our time, we're kind of pushing you out here, and they did, and I think Seattle's been the big beneficiary of that deal. The Broncos, on the other hand, look, it didn't work out first year. Sean Payton comes in. He's had success with almost everyone he's been a part of. Did not want any part of Russell Wilson either. And they, you know, release him, let him go, and they're going to eat a big part of his contract. And that's a reason why he's an asset right now to a lot of teams in the free agent market. Who he signs with, the Denver Broncos will basically be covering the contract. So you can get Russell Wilson for about $1 million on your payroll with another team in the league paying it for you or paying the rest of the money for you. And, you know, there are a couple of teams that have some questions at quarterback. If you want to give a guy who was, you know, successful early on in his career a chance to maybe give a little bit of life to a team like the Vikings or the Falcons or the Steelers or the Giants, maybe – you know, maybe it works out, but I don't know if he's a starter in this league anymore. He definitely did not display that this past year. They basically dumbed him down and made him a game manager. A lot of his passes were just between 5 and 7 yards, kind of check down passes, very vanilla stuff. So I don't think he's a playmaker that he once was and a home run acquisition, but for teams like the Minnesota Vikings, who have to figure out what they're going to do with Kirk Cousins, you could either trade for Justin Fields or maybe bring in Russell Wilson. For the Atlanta Falcons, I think they'll try and sign Kirk Cousins if he is to leave Minnesota. But a fallback option, trading for Justin Fields or maybe giving Russell Wilson a shot. I think Wilson's best option would probably be Pittsburgh, because you got a good defense there. And you got a question mark at quarterback there as well. So you have an opportunity to be a starter there if Kenny Pickett doesn't pan out. But the Steelers do have a lot of confidence in Kenny Pickett, so they may stay with him. But I think even if he gets signed by a team, I do not think he's a starter day one unless he were to go to the Falcons. But I think the Falcons are more interested in Kirk Cousins and possibly trading for Justin Fields.
Okay, good. And then I got two small things here. The NFL draft is coming up for the Tennessee Titans. What's going to be important? And are they going to get rid of I can't remember the quarterback or the running
Ryan
back
Tannehill.
Name.
Oh, or Derrick Henry.
Yeah. What's going on with that? And what's important to them for them in the draft?
Well, Derrick Henry likely is gone. You know, he had a very big kind of farewell, if you will, when they played the Jaguars in the final regular season game, where he had one of his best games of the season. Got on the microphone, thanked the fans, and you know, walked out to a standing ovation. That screams to me that the team knows he's moving on and that he knows he's moving on too. I think he'll be a top in a running back market that's you know, just added Saquon Barkley recently. I think Derrick Henry is still one of the top names. I'd look for a serious contender to add him. And you know, he's still a really productive guy, so I think he makes an impact on a lot of teams. That chapter's moved on in Tennessee, however. Ryan Tannehill will not be the guy. They're going to roll with Will Levis going forward, especially with what he was able to do in the second half of this past season. In the draft, their biggest thing has got to be offensive line. They had one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL this season. You've got your quarterback of the future. You've got an offensive-minded coach. I think weapons and your offensive line are your next points of emphasis, and more particular, the offensive line. Because you don't know how good a quarterback's going to be with a bad offensive line. That needs to be the Titans' number one thing in the draft.
Okay, good. And then one last thing here, and I'm going to hang up and listen. But so spring practice kicks off, I guess, when y'all get back from spring break, or they might already be into it. But what do we look for you know, this for during spring break? Are there any newcomers that we should look at? And then I know there's going to just be some excitement, and so you can comment on all that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate your call, Bruce. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, in terms of the Tennessee football team, you've got a lot of intriguing guys coming in, especially from the high school level. Guys like Mike Matthews at wide receiver. He's a guy that could possibly get some playing time next year, depending on how elusive he is in practice. He's a guy to watch out for. Zalance Hurd, offensive lineman transfer from LSU, former five-star. He's being added to that offensive line. Very interested to see how big of an imposing figure he is, because he's huge. 6'6", 300 pounds, that's a big man. Is he able to live up to those numbers in production on the line? Especially, you know, you got Nico Amaliava. You know what you have with him, especially when there's a good offensive line. As I just mentioned with Will Levis, there's not a good quarterback without a good offensive line. So Zalance Hurd's a guy I'm looking for there. Excited to see Peely back at linebacker for the Vols. Now missed a good chunk of last season due to injury. He returns once again. He was a two-year captain for BYU before transferring to Tennessee last season. I'm interested to see what he looks like, especially coming off a significant injury. And then you've got a plethora of defensive back transfers as well. I think the defensive back group is the biggest thing to watch out for on this this Tennessee defense, because that's the biggest question mark. And in the spring, you're trying to figure out, okay, the guys we have right now, is this what can win us games and you know, come season time? And if it's not, then the portal reopens again. You've got to attack the portal and get guys that can play those positions. So the defensive backs is something I'd watch out for on the defensive side. Keenan Peely, seeing what he is like coming off a really big injury. On the offensive line, Zalance Hurd, big imposing figure. Does he live up to the hype? And in terms of a couple of newcomers from the recruiting class at a high school, Boo Carter, a really good athlete. Mike Matthews, a really good receiver. What do those guys add to this team? And one more thing I'd add, if Dylan Sampson is capable of being that RB1, I think there's without a doubt that he is a very good playmaker, but can he block, I think, is the biggest question, and I think that would keep him off the field if he's unable to. Thank you for the call, Bruce. We appreciate it. All right, real quick, let's head back to college basketball. And there's a team I want to share with the listeners that when you're making your bracket, you need to keep your eye on. The Creighton Blue Jays. Watch out for the Creighton Blue Jays. Creighton, over the weekend, defeated Marquette 89-75. Baylor Schreierman, 26 points, 6 of 12 from 3. Ryan Kalkbrenner, 19 points on 9 of 12 shooting. Trey Alexander, 18 points, 11 assists. Creighton did not play during the midweek, had a midweek bye, but they'll play again tomorrow. So this is the most recent game to give stats off of. But a key stat from this game, and this is one of the things that scares me a little bit about this team, but the rest of the numbers I'll give are why you should back this team and think about this team as a possible dark horse. Only 6 players played more than 14 minutes out of the 8 players that played on Saturday. It's a very thin group. They don't go deep into their bench, but their rotations and the guys they do play are some of the best in the country. Creighton boasts 2 5-man lineups in the top 12 in the net rating in college basketball when on the court together. So Tennessee, for example, and you might, if you don't know the stat here, Tennessee, their starting 5 was Ziegler, Connect, Vescovi, James, and Adu, ranked 3rd in the country in net rating when they're on the court together. Purdue has the highest one with Zach Edey in that starting group. But Creighton boasts two lineups in the top 12 of the net rating when they're all on the court. So they might not be deep, but they're able to put out 2 of the best lineups in the country at their disposal. So this is a very good team, and I'll dive into a little bit more here. They're the highest shot-making ability team in the country, according to shot quality. When these guys get open looks, they knock them down, and they have the ability to make the highest percentage of these shots when given, and that's a dangerous team. That's a recipe for a dangerous team come tournament time. Basically saying, this team gets hot, It's hard to stop them. Crane is also the only team in college basketball as of this weekend to boast 7-plus quad one wins and 7-plus quad two wins together. So Crane also gets it done against the good teams and handles business against the inferior ones. Crane is 11 overall in the KenPom, 12th in adjusted offense, 22nd in adjusted defense. This is a really good basketball team. And I think the thing that makes them so good is their ability to match up with anyone in the country. I kind of view this team as UConn Junior. You got Ryan Kalkbrenner down low that can compete with anyone in the country on the block. You know, he's a guy that can block shots, can protect the rim, but also can get it done around the rim offensively. That's a really good guy to have. On the perimeter, these guys are lengthy. And Baylor Schreierman, who's going to be up for Big East Player of the Year this season, and Trey Alexander as well, a guy that very well could have gone to the draft last year, comes back and has been a big production for this team too. They've got length and shooting on the perimeter, and their guards in Ashford are great shooters as well. This is a really good team, and I think if the draw is right, I'd look at Creighton as a possible dark horse come tournament time. I think they have the ability to match up with anyone in the country, and I think if they get hot, there are not many teams in the country that can match the numbers that they produce in terms of shot-making ability in the country. The Creighton Blue Jays are a team you need to watch out for, and hopefully Tennessee does not have to match up with them, because I think Creighton could match up with anyone in the country and pose a threat to anyone. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up the episode with Vols bracketology. Joe Lunardi is slated the Vols as a number one seed. Let's dive into the hypothetical but possible path for the Vols when we return on Overtime.
Savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you ready to flash that dazzling smile? Well, look no further than Knoxville Smiles. Our experienced team is here to give you the care and attention you deserve. From routine checkups and cleanings to advanced cosmetic treatments, we've got you covered. Say goodbye to dental worries and hello to a confident, radiant smile. Don't wait any longer. Schedule your appointment today and unlock the power of your smile. Call 865-539-1776 to schedule your appointment today, or just visit KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbl Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbl crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast.
I get those goosebumps every time you come around. Back here on Overtime, rounding out a solo edition of Overtime with William Pattison. I guess it's pretty fitting for the name. But a great episode. We appreciate you listening along with us, breaking down Vols and the Wildcats in the first hour. Talking and taking callers, as we always appreciate, as well. Great conversation with Bruce earlier about what to expect from the Tennessee Vols football team, as well as the Tennessee Vols basketball team come tournament time. A lot of great stuff. We appreciate you listening along with us. Look, we are just days away from CBS's March Madness theme clamoring among our walls as we all anticipate the selection committee's reveal of the 68 teams that have been selected for the tournament. ESPN's Joe Lunardi released his updated bracket yesterday to give college basketball fans the latest on the standing of the big dance, and the one seeds, and this feels good to say this, consist of Purdue, UConn, Houston, and Tennessee. With the win over South Carolina, Tennessee was boosted to a number one seed in Lenardi's eyes. Many people had already slated the Vols as a number one seed. Lenardi, with the win over the Gamecocks, agrees. So the possible path, and this is hypothetical, not a hypothetical guy, but I'll allow it for this exercise. The number one seed in the West region, and they would open up in Charlotte, facing off against either Norfolk State or Central Connecticut. The 8-9 matchup would be Texas and Nebraska. The 5 seed against the 12 seed would be San Diego State versus Grand Canyon. The number 4 seed would be Illinois versus UC Irvine. The 6 seed would be Utah State versus the either St. John's or Virginia winner. And then number 3, Baylor, 14, Colgate, 7, Gonzaga, 10, Colorado State, 2 would be Arizona, and they would face off against the 15 seed Eastern Washington. Going down this list, a possible matchup with either Texas or Nebraska, I'm perfectly fine with. Nebraska is not the same team when they're not at home. Multiple bad losses on the road. The reason why they've been on the bubble is because they can't get it done on the road in a mediocre Big Ten. Texas has been hot and cold. Max Amos for them is a seasoned vet come tournament time, as he was with Oral Roberts for two different tournament runs. But I think Tennessee matches up nicely against both these teams. Nebraska is very live and die on some poor shooting, a poor shot selection. If it goes in, it looks good. And most of the times at home, it does. So that's why this team is a 9 seed and not a higher seed, because they can't get it done on the road. I don't mind the matchup between Texas or Nebraska. Now, a possible Sweet 16 matchup would consist of the teams of San Diego State, Grand Canyon, Illinois, UC Irvine. I think Grand Canyon, the Lopes, coached by Coach Drew, who was at Vanderbilt before, the Lopes are a really good team, one to watch out for. And they could very easily upset San Diego State, who struggles offensively. And then you've already seen Illinois once this season. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great one. I think Tennessee matches up well against them as well, especially down low. And it's hard to beat any team twice in one season, so I guess there's that aspect of it. But I would not mind the matchups of Illinois, Grand Canyon, or San Diego State either. Now, let's say you get even further on, facing off against either Utah State, Baylor, Gonzaga, Colorado State, or Arizona. Utah State is a very good defensive team on the perimeter, but do they stack up the same way with an SEC team as they do in the Mountain West? The Mountain West is a good conference, very competitive all season long, but Utah State does not have that go-to closer like the Vols do in Don Connect. Baylor, I think, is a very interesting team come tournament time. Very young. Jacoby Walter, a freshman, is their kind of go-to guy offensively outside of Yves Missy, who's another freshman for them. So, come tournament time, freshmen usually don't do well unless you're a Kentucky team with, 8 NBA players on your roster. So I think Tennessee's biggest benefit in a possible matchup with them would be your veteran depth. And then Gonzaga's a team that's been really hot as of late, got a really big win over St. Mary's on Saturday, and before that got a big win against San Francisco on a neutral site court at Chase Center. But Gonzaga, I think, lacks way too much defensively to be able to keep up against Tennessee, and Tennessee's number one, top-ranked defense would do really well, I think, and they'd match up well too. Really good guard play from the Zags with Ryan Nebhard. They've got a couple of veterans sprinkled out throughout that starting lineup. Graham Ike is their big man down low, but I think Jonas Adu would match up well there too. And then I think the last team, you know, you have to worry about would be Arizona. But I think there's a reason why you've taken them over for that one seed. Arizona does not have the same strength of record, in my opinion, than Tennessee. I think a lot of those early season wins that are now that are quad one wins do not look as good now. And also keep in mind this team lost to Stanford and Oregon State, two teams that are well below 500. The great teams do not, you know, cough up games to those kind of teams. And Arizona did early on in conference play, and also lost to Washington State both on the road and at home. I think out of all the possible one seeds, there's a reason why Arizona was dropped. And I just think they're a good team. I like Pelle Larsen and the guys they've got on that group. But I do not think they are a better team than Tennessee. If you had a possible matchup with them in the Elite Eight, I like Tennessee's possibilities there as well. So really, we've been doing this practice for about a month now, month and a half, these Vols bracketologies. This is probably my favorite draw we've gotten compared to last week was the worst draw we've gotten. So maybe, maybe by tournament time we'll middle out and get a solid draw. But all hypothetical, but still fun to talk about. Winding down here on overtime, I appreciate you listening as always. Once again, we will not be on the air next week as we are all in college headed to spring break. But follow me on Twitter at William Pattison on Twitter and X, whatever you want to call it. And I'll be giving updates on my thoughts about the Vols throughout the week as we get into the SEC tournament play. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's going to wrap us up here on Overtime. We'll see you in 2 Mondays.